Accession number 11938, Rule 40.
Mr. G. Iston, Reel 40. What was the situation with regard to flies and eating in the desert, Mr. Iston?
Well, I just mentioned we did strict hygiene to try and keep the flies as far under control as we could. But there's still lots of flies. I don't think you'll find a desert where there's not flies and bugs of every description. And shitehawks. Looking for food. But really speaking, those desert sores, and of course flies thrive on desert sores, that is one of their main foods, and they spread it as well. So if you had a cut of any description, you would guarantee the flies would find the blood and drop some of the virus in, and then you finish up with a nasty great sore. And I don't suppose, really speaking, there's very many who got away without desert sores at some stage. Some got really serious. It was looked a bit like a trench foot from the First World War, I would think. The way they swelled up, they used to seem as though you had a nasty red. Generally, there was a white spot in the middle, red all around it, and then the outsides would be swollen up from infection. Very often there was a lump in your groin or under your arm or down the side of your neck, trying to contain the infection. Not a lot of people were hospitalised through it. And most of them were cured by the MO and the medics, stretcher bearers.
What did they use?
I was trying to think of the name of it now. Sulfolamide, mainly.
Is that a cream?
It could be cream or it could be powder. I think in most cases they use the powder, but it could be in a cream form. Because very often when it started, there would just be like a little lump. It would be a cut or an abrasion to start with. Something you'd done yourself, maybe tapped a finger or caught yourself on a can or something, been rubbing against it. With sweating a bit, and you get very often a belt just on top of the pelvic bone, where the belt used to rub a bit. You get a bit of a sore there, and all the flies. Well, of course, we didn't use shirts much, so obviously the flies had a chance to get to it. A horrible thing, unpleasant thing, and dirty looking. If you got it in between the legs, you'll think you've got all sorts of diseases, but it was a nasty thing. But as I said, I don't remember a lot being... There are a few had to go away, because, if it got it real bad, it could just look like a trench foot or a trench finger or a... It used to swell up terrible.
Were there any other pests which made life difficult?
I don't think there was anything that we couldn't cope with. Yes, there was lots of things. Some places had a little midge that used to bite. But we didn't have a lot of them. I don't know whether the flies sort of kept the midges down or somebody else kept them down. I'll tell you what we did see occasionally. In fact, we used to look for them, chameleons. These are the fellows who change colour, and we used to try and keep one of them around for... Well, the idea was we were going to bring them home to show their kids, because you put them on a red thing, it would come up with red spots and then sort of look like the background. They used to change its colour, the background. And they had long tongues. They used to eat flies. Well, the lizards are that way, aren't they? They just shoot the tongue out and catch a fly. And the tongue seemed to be longer than the chameleon was, for all you had a longish tail.
How did you while away the long hours, particularly during the day when you weren't moving around? How did you relax?
This course that I was doing, that took quite a lot of time. We had a certain amount of maintenance to do on vehicles which were up the front. We had to get whatever sleep we could through the day, because we were out most nights, or doing something most nights. So the mail was coming through now, and so there were a few letters to write. There was the odd can of beer, and there was always a pot of char on the go. Well, they used to pass. We used to spot the aeroplanes and try and decide what they were, for although too high for us to see, but we'd try and decide what they were.
How comfortable were you able to make your living quarters?
Well, being in the MT and the amount of stuff that we had hold of, we were very comfortable, really. If we could get a vehicle close enough to us, we'd run a light from the battery of the vehicle. But we were very careful, of course. If anybody spotted any chink of light at all, there was holy hell let loose. So we could read. In most cases, we managed to read. We're really quite comfortable. In fact, this was probably as comfortable as we'd been for quite a long time, even much better than Amarillo, because Amarillo was, although there's perks at Amarillo, which you could get to the coast and into Alex, and so you could have a night out or a day out occasionally. But the sun was going back a bit now. We'd passed midsummer, and we're getting a cool draft now and again from the sea. I found this was quite pleasant, really.
Mentioning weather, was it pretty constant?
I think up to now, we had a wet spell at Amarillo. We had a wet spell on the airstrips. And I think we had two wet spells at Alamein. Now, Alamein wasn't as bad as it was at Amarillo, because Amarillo seemed to turn alter mud. But Alamein, it seemed to have a sand covering, so the rain did soak away. And, you know, I've wondered about this. I can't remember being wet in the dugout. Not like the way in the First World War, where, I mean, they were constantly in water. And there was no way they could get away from the water. Of course, their trenches were much deeper than we were, because they had to have them deep so they could walk down. I mean, our trenches were weapon pits, more where you could lay down rather than stand up and fire. You used to lay down and fire. So I don't remember them being wet in the trenches at all. We must have been. I mean, we would be wet, but not standing water. There was one place where the water just laid on the top. That wasn't our main, though. The water just laid on the top, and it was like to look at, like a mirage. Because it maybe two, 3 inches deep. Well, coming up the uppers of your boots. So it'd be 2 inches deep. And the mud in that particular spot. And we had a terrible job with the vehicles there, because every time I tried to move a vehicle, it just went down.
Do you remember where this was?
I just forget now. We had trouble at Benghazi, but that's later on. Much later on, we had Benghazi. We were ground to a halt. We were on our way up to the... we were going to do an attack trip with a Gala. And we were moving up, but when we got to Benghazi, a terrific storm, and we were grounded there.
Did you have any visitors coming into the line from outside who rather surprised you?
There were a few. We had Horrocks on quite a few occasions. With Nichols came occasionally, for all we weren't in his dip at this time. We had one or two ex-colonels who were now in staff jobs. Harry.
You mentioned something to me about Salvation Army appearing.
The Salvation Army came up with a vehicle. We stood behind the ridge, behind us, not in the front line exactly, but just behind us, which was only a matter of getting over the one ridge, and then we were able to go to the Salvation Army. They were great. came up every day. I think it was 3 o'clock or thereabouts. They came up slowly and parked up underneath the ridge behind us. And there was a spot of bother there because the lads started trooping across for a good cup of tea. I mean, we used to make our own brew, which we thought was good tea, but it was nothing like what the Salvation Army were making. And they had a few choice cakes, cakes were things we didn't see. We were getting some bread, but our bread was always covered with sand, dust. Of course, the Salvation Army, they had a different method somehow. They seemed as though they could get sandwiches through. And different type of cigarettes, different toothpaste. I suppose all toothpaste is the same, basically, but to get a change, it's something. Writing pads, things like this. There were really something you look forward to eventually when they got used to it.
Were these people from England?
Yes, I think so, yes.
And were they all men?
No. In fact, I think the first one came was all women. Three women, I think it was. It was like a Black Maria. Black Maria, that's the old term for the police van. It had a separate cab. I think it was an ancient Ford. Separate cab and a box on the back. And the side opened out so you could serve through the side. And generally there was one lady in the driving seat and two in the back, I think. The worst men came occasionally, but the Salvation Army were very good. They did. If you asked them for something, there was something particularly you wanted, occasionally the lads would want a watch. I don't really know why I want a watch, but of course time had no real thing. But in case, if you wanted a watch, and they asked the Salvation Army, they'd try and get one and bring it up the next day. They were very good in things like that. Some lads, they wanted a particular soap. And they would try and do things like this. They would go out. I mean, they must have gone out themselves and purchased them in Alexandria or wherever they came from, and purchased themselves and then brought it up.
We must be getting near to the time when the Battle of Alamein was starting. What were we doing at this period?
You know, 50 David this time was a complete mixture. It had gone down into the Delta, and part of it had been taken over by anti-aircraft division. 69 Brigade were in the line straight after Matru. I mean, they didn't do to Matru. 151 Brigade went into Matru, and 69 Brigade went straight into the line at Alamein. So they'd had a long spell in the line, and they'd gone out to the line now to become a training unit. Well, to train up ready for further action. We'd had the 50 DIF tanks attached to the division at this stage. And it was a completely mixed up affair. I could see Montgomery's style in a sense that we would never fight as a job column anymore, but yet we were. We were going all over the place. We went up once. The New Zealanders had come back in the line at the top end of the line. Ellesborough Ridge. Anyway, right at the top of the line on the coast. And I went up with a company up there to assist the New Zealanders in an attack that they were doing.
And we went up. Any idea when this would be?
Well, I suppose now we're getting towards the end of September, maybe early October. In that period, anyway. Because we seem to be going from one end of the line, the Greeks at one end, the New Zealanders at the other end, and we're doing a skirmish with them all. Just one night stands, maybe two nights. And then we come back again to where the brigade was. And we did this a lot. We went down to the Free French at one end and then back up to the Australians on the other end. I think this was possibly the idea was that confusion. If anybody got taken, was captured, 6th Durham Light Infantry, one end one day and the other end the other day, they left Rommel trying to sort out which end we're at. But it wasn't Rommel then. I think Rommel had gone back by that stage. Well, very close to it anyway. Rommel had gone back to Germany. I think he went back to Germany.
Could you see that something big was coming along?
Yes, we knew. We had been told that the next full moon was going to be a sort of a fatal one. We weren't sure it could go either way again. I mean, like Gazala, we were thinking of doing things at Gazala, and Rommel jumped the gun at us there. And of course, it could have happened again. But we had a good idea that the next full moon, something was going to happen.
Told to you by officers?
Yes, yes. We didn't know exactly what, because we were being told that we weren't going to be in the the shooting match proper. So right up to early October we started doing this end for end business, and then we had a spell with these blown up tanks down the south to make him think that the attack was going to come from the south.
Were you involved in this?
We had a spell with this, yes. You see, with having a reserve company now, we could swap the companies around and do all sorts of different training and different things. There was also an artificial pipeline laid down to the south to make it look as though the attack was definitely going down from that end.
What was your role in this? What were you doing?
Well, mainly I was just with the transport to take the lads down, and they would... the REs were really responsible. I suppose we're like a labour unit to the REs at this particular stage. I think the thing was that they were trying to keep the line without a lot of spare bodies in, if you know what I mean. They were trying to assemble the bodies back and keep anything that was happening in the line with the people in the line. And with us now in a situation where we had a spare company, not a spare company, but a company in reserve, we were able to shoot off and do various shoot-ups or whatever was required in place. I mean, we'd go out with the REs lifting mines in a particular spot. Maybe there's a patrol going out, a biggish patrol going out, and we'd go out with the REs and sort of do the forward, protect the REs while they were doing it. And I think, I'm not certain about this, but I think we went up to the north end mid-October to lift mines. The high tides were laying mines as fast as we could lift them, though. It was a similar situation to Gazala, where the Italians were laying mines, we were going out and lifting them, and I think the same thing was happening in reverse at the top end of the Alamein line. We were laying them and they were going out and picking them up the other way on.
Do you recall the night that the bombardment and the attack at Alamein started?
Yes. One thing I really remember about it was the Navy shells coming across and exploding. For all we were I suppose 20 miles away from the spot. But you could pick the Navy out, the Navy shells, when they landed, they were all massive things.
They were coming over from the sea?
Coming from the sea and firing down the line. When you see this happening, and you sit there and sort of watching it, you've got to stop and think, how the hell does that happen? There's a ship out there at sea. How does he know where he's firing? You know, it's unbelievable, really, that he can sort of pinpoint a line of trenches from a sea where he's only gone into that night. I mean, he can't be there through the day, otherwise the aircraft would have been all down and chasing him. So he's moved up to a spot during the night, and he's laying a ton of explosive in a trench. You know, I stopped to think about this. How the hell does he do that? And I still don't know. It's terrific when you think about it. He just moves up the coastline after dark and starts laying tons of shells, you know, a ton at a time of shell down.
You were in the southern sector for the beginning of the time, October 23rd.
Well, I've got a feeling that I went up with somebody with to do. I don't know whether this was the 25th or not. 23rd. I have a feeling we went up to do something with the 9th Australians that particular night. Or maybe the night after. Must have been the night after, I think, because we were down on the 23rd. We must have been down in the in our position in the line. Because at the same time, you see, the Greeks did an attack at the same time. The 44 did an attack at the same time. And the I think it was the Indian Brigade came in and did an attack. But we just did our patrols. We, as a brigade, we didn't do an attack. Because I've got a terrible feeling that for some reason I went up with the company to do it to the 9th Australian. Because they did quite a number of attacks, the 9th Australians. And the 51st did a number of attacks. And then the Greeks and the 44th and the Indians, the South Africans, first South African, they attacked a bit lower down, and then the New Zealand Div had come back in the line, and they all had a go. In fact, there was attacks almost the full length of the line apart from ours, and it could be that we had one company away, I think. Doing something. I'm nearly certain we went up there about this time, because I was remember sitting right underneath one of the Gordons and he was firing over my head. I confuse here, because that could have been the night I was up with Battiscombe. I don't know.
When you were pulled out to make the attack of 1st, 2nd of November, I think it was.
So,
do you recall that action?
Well, I still have a feeling we left somebody in the line that night.
This was the action where you opened the corridor?
Yeah.
What was your role in this particular action?
Well, just the same as it was with Colonel Battiscombe's. Once the attack got through, we were going to bring the anti-tank up and the mortars and the carriers and exploit the situation and put a defensive corridor down, which we did do on this occasion. And it was a terrific barrage that night. Oh, terrific. We were sort of centre of the attack. I think we had the 9th Australian on the right and a brigade of the 51st Ireland on the left. I think it was 8th and 9th went forward and the 6th were going to do the mopping up as we came, as we went through. So we more or less followed the 6th through, followed on at a discreet distance behind and laid the anti-tank and the mortars and carriers out. I don't know whether we've mentioned this or not, but between brigades the both was fired. Tracer either side, and in between battalions the machine guns were firing tracer. So your lines were marked when you went out of your district with your own peril sort of style.
What was the picture like? Can you recall that particular night?
Well, you know, by now, you see, we'd done this so often that it was becoming there was nothing strange about it, in a sense. There was nothing... there was a worry of... yes, he knew you were doing something that wasn't natural. We had a fairly good rum ration, if I remember rightly. Again, it's the waiting before you get started. You see, we must be in sort of the reserve mopping up battalion. The other two battalions went ahead and we had to stop back and let them get through the minefield, and then we went through the gap and gradually exploited it. It was a nasty night eventually, because once we got through the 8th, 9th, we were going to go on and sort of make a defensive on the north side of the... so the 9th was going to be spread out from the gap as far as they could go, and then we were going to go out and spread on the end of them. So in fact, once the ninth had done their attack, we had to start and do ours and extend the line, the north side of it, which meant that you were taking the battalion out and in a line, sort of, we were going west, and then once we got to a spot, we've got to wheel the attack round. So we completed the line, because this is where the problem was, you see, with the Batterscones, that we'd gone through and hadn't consolidated the flanks.
Did you get involved in this in any way?
Well, just after we went through, when we took the carriers out and the anti-tank guns and battalion headquarters, you know, battalion headquarters, echelon is a small truck. Which takes a couple of wireless sets, and we're at a few wireless sets by this time. Wireless sets and the RSMs running around with these ammunition trucks. They are sort of ammunition trucks, they're well loaded, you know. And if it gets a bit soft, it's the ammunition trucks that go down, because ammunition is very, very solid. And we're in a bit of trouble with ammunition trucks. There's quite a few vehicles to get through at this stage, and we got through and held our line, but unfortunately, when the tanks tried to get through, they came up another line of 88s. I think we went 5,000 yards again that night. You see, the Batterscope attack was going to be the breakout in Auchinleck style, and really it was a good practice for what we did for the Montgomery one. But prior to us, to this 2nd of November, of course, there'd been numerous attacks in that area. I said the Australians and New Zealanders and the South Africans had all had to go before we got there. And the tanks did get through us, but again, they came up against 88s. In fact, I think another brigade of 51 Division had to go through the next night and finally get shot of these 88s. But by now we'd got into the state where if tanks ran into trouble, they didn't sort of try and bash their way through so much as they had done previously. If they're up against 88s, they would sink back and use their guns, try and clear the 88s by using their guns, or at least giving the infantry cover so that they could get in and do a skirmish on the drums, on the guns, and clear the guns so the tanks would get through. Previously, I think we'd had too much of the charger attack, of the horse charger thing, of a tank is just like a charger, and the faster you go, the better it is. It's not like that anymore, I'm afraid, because there's guns to match the tanks now.
Did you yourself have any problems?
No, I wasn't hurt at all. No, I don't recall any real problems. As I said, by now, you see, this is becoming routine, and it's a different kettle of fish. When you do something at first, it sticks in your memory more than he does later on.
So coming out the next morning, what was your role then? Were you waiting to bring back stragglers?
Well, I think we waited there all day until that night. The 51st Brigade of 51st Div went in and cleared it. And we came out that night. We were relieved by... Somebody relieved us on the flanks anyway. And by now, of course, the Germans are getting worried. And they're starting to pull out. So the situation eased considerably, in a sense. They sort of realised that they were going to get cut off one way or the other, either from the south or in the armoury in the north was going to get cut off, and they were starting to pull back.
Did you wait for the battalion to come back to you, or were you moved back yourself?
We all came back together, more or less, then. And we went back to our position in the line, to where we'd come from. And I suppose the next day, or maybe a couple of days later, I can still see the swarms of battalions and German troops coming across, 6 or 7 abreast.